Welcome to Stu's EV Universe, where you can find anything and everything electric vehicle. Welcome to Stu's EV Universe, and we're going to be talking about Gen Z and EVs today. So we have a first for the podcast, where we have a roundtable, and we're all going to be kind of chiming in on some questions. Hopefully we'll kind of jump off of those questions and have a really nice discussion. I guess if we could just start off by introducing everybody.
I can start, because yeah, I'm Eden just right here. So I'm Eden Unger. I edit the podcast. I made the music for the podcast. Yeah.
What's your age?
I'm 20 years old. I am a music education student at school. And yeah, I'm excited to be on the podcast.
I can go next. I'm Dylan. I use they, them pronouns. I don't know a whole lot about electric cars, but I do know about the culture around electric cars. I am a Spanish major, and yeah, I'm also excited to be here. I'm also 20.
My name's Kelly. I'm 20, and currently not attending school, but I do work in a senior living facility. So if anything, I feel like I'm an expert on opinions not related to Gen Z. purely opposite of Gen Z.
Yeah, my name's Spencer Roden. I'm from Arkansas. I thought I'd throw that one in there with mine. I'm also 20, so it sounds like we're all 20. I'm a computer science major, and I have a huge interest in electric cars. I've actually been on Stu's EV Universe before. That was an awesome experience for me. And I'm just enthusiastic about it. And I have a business that I've been running around electric vehicles for about 2 years now. I'm really excited to talk about it.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you, everybody. Now, I think just to start off, out of all of you all, I mean, who drives? Not everybody on here drives or knows how to drive. So, Eden, you want to start off?
Yeah, I don't drive. I've driven maybe twice ever. Both times in an electric car. So that's something. I don't have a license or a learner's permit or anything. I don't really want to drive that much, but you know, I'm open to learning at some point.
I also don't drive. Although one time when I was like 8, I helped drive an electric go-kart and I almost ate a butterfly on accident. So that's my experience.
I feel like you're the most experienced person here, honestly.
Kelly?
Also mostly a non-driver. I do it piecemeal, but I mostly use public transportation. I'm a big public transportation guy.
I do drive, and I don't know if part of that is like Arkansas. Like everything is spaced out. I started like driving myself to school in like high school, just because like it was huge.
Yeah, and I guess kind of jumping off something that Kelly said, public transportation. So that's interesting right there. What are your experiences with public transportation? Is it something that you have taken that you're not familiar with? If it is something that you've used, is it electric, buses or whatever? Just kind of wondering about that.
Like I said, I mostly get around using public transportation. It's how I'm getting to work a good half of the week when I'm not carpooling. It's how I get to pretty much everywhere else. In Louisville, it sucks. It's much better than in some other places, especially places like Arkansas where stuff is so spaced out. It's like Louisville is nice in that it's a very compact city. So even though our busing system isn't great, you can still go most places. But it's all centralized via downtown. So you want to go anywhere, you have to go downtown first and then go somewhere else. And that's a bit frustrating. It makes it so that every bus ride, no matter how far it is usually minimum an hour. Yeah. Like some place that I can get to within 15 minutes max driving, it's going to take me an hour 45 to get there by bus. I did also, when I visited South Korea several years ago, I got around exclusively via public transportation system. And that was literally the most beautiful transportation experience I've ever had in my life. The buses were so nice. They always came on time. You were never riding for more than like 15 minutes. So like there's potential in public transportation. I know that buses can be really good. The buses in Louisville are not great and their shocks are always terrible.
I can speak on buses. I actually didn't ride public transportation until I went to UK for college. But when I'm on UK's campus, I pretty much exclusively use public transportation. Usually only the campus buses because the larger city bus network is like really run down and really horribly funded. And it's important that I should note that I am a part-time wheelchair user. So I'm an ambulatory wheelchair user. And usually when I'm not with my wheelchair and I'm out, I'll use my cane. So buses are a mixed bag for me because on one hand, I really love that I don't have to worry about driving. I'm just able to sit down, maybe prepare for class as I'm on the way to class. But then on the other hand, you bring a wheelchair into the problem, or even just a cane sometimes, and people don't know how to act. You'd be surprised the number of people who will just spread out in the handicap seats, even though there's like a sign right behind your head that says, hey, let people. Yeah, I've had a lot of very frustrating experiences, but overall, I'm very grateful for public transportation. I think just this past semester, UK introduced some electric buses, I think, and they're all like clean and nice and they smell like new cars. And I'm really hoping that they switch out the old buses for those two, because on top of being electric, they also have a new system to secure your wheelchair that's completely wheelchair user operated, because on the old buses, the driver has to like put the bus in park, get up and strap you down as you just kind of sit there. But on the new buses, they have like you position yourself and then you press a button and it's all high tech and fun.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. I go to school with Dylan, and I also had a similar experience because we live kind of in the suburbs, so not downtown. And so, you know, there's no buses or any kind of public transportation that is near us at all. So, you know, if I went downtown, I could use a bus, but, you know, I would have to travel a fair distance to get on a bus. And once I did, you know, it's just like so confusing and hard, and it's like really sucks. But on campus, it's a lot better. Like I can, if I, you know, need to get somewhere super far away, or if I'm running late to class and I can't really walk the whole way quick enough, it really helps. And I think with the electric stuff, I can definitely, like, smell the buses when I'm walking past. If I'm walking past a bus, like, I can smell the exhaust. And that's not great for my asthma. It just, you know, makes it a lot harder to breathe. It's a little bit, you know, I can't smell that much when I'm on the bus because of COVID. We wear masks on the bus. And so, you know, I don't really smell that because I'm just, you know, masked up, making sure that I'm staying safe. But I'm sure that if I wasn't wearing a mask, I would, because I've heard from, you know, other people who ride public transportation that the smell of, like, gasoline is kind of overwhelming when you take buses, you know, without protecting your lungs.
I've never really had any experiences with public transportation just because it's not really available where I've been. I go to school in Batesville, Arkansas, which is even smaller than where I'm originally from. So there's absolutely no public transportation and none in my hometown either.
Yeah, and I mean, even above the electric stuff, I'm also, you know, one of the biggest reasons why I like electric, you know, cars and stuff like that is because they are better for the environment. And I feel like even if it is a gas bus, it's still better for the environment than, you know, 20 people taking their own car, but just by themselves driving somewhere. It's still better for people to take public transportation. And I think whether, you know, electric public transportation would be amazing, but any kind of public transportation that's widely available would be even better because it would make people, you know, have more access to jobs if they don't have enough money to get a car, more access to schooling if they don't have a car, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and going back to cars, does anybody here, I guess it would be Spencer because you're the driver. Do you own a car? Or, I mean, I guess it's also open to everybody. I mean, do you want to own a car either now or sometime soon? I mean, or, you know, we're kind of living in a time when we have a lot of options with, you know, car ride services. And so that's not even necessarily a given that you would, you know, need to have a car.
I personally drive a Prius, which is a hybrid, so it's not quite an electric vehicle, but it uses gas and basically when you're going down hills or braking, it recharges an electric battery and electric motor to push it farther. So it's a little bit better than just a plain gas car, but and one day I hope to fully to buy a fully electric vehicle, but not quite there yet.
Yeah, I obviously don't own a car because I don't drive. In the future, you know, I can see myself, you know, learning how to drive, getting my license and getting a car. But that's not really, if I had to like picture the you know, ideal scenario, that wouldn't probably be my ideal scenario. It'd be moving somewhere that has like a really robust public transportation system, or, you know, hopefully in the future there'll be more places like that, so I have more of a option between different places. If I owned a car, I'd definitely get an EV for several reasons. One, I think it's better for the environment. Two, you know, Mr. EV is my dad, so I think he would look down if I didn't. And also, I'm a very anxious person, and I get scared that, like, gas cars are just gonna, like, explode. And I get less anxious about that for electric cars.
My family had a scare with that when I was younger. Like, we actually had a car where, like, it was smelling of gasoline all the time, and we took it to the mechanic. It was like, oh, yeah, there's a split fuel line that's just spurting all over the engine. So at any moment when you were running this car, it could have exploded and killed all of you. So that's something where it's like, pretty much everybody else in my family of driving age can drive and owns a car. And in fact, for several years before I kind of solidified the fact that I'm just like not really full-time driving yet, I had a car lined up for me, like my dad's old vehicle, and none of them do electric. And I think it's, but I think I would want to do that. Every ride I've had in an electric car has, like, this is my personal bias, it's quieter and it's smoother. It's just a better experience for me to ride in. But also there's that fact that it's like, it's not completely free of mechanical issues, but that's one issue that I would worry less about, is like possible like engine combustion.
Yeah. I mean, EVs have been shown to be safer, much safer. You know, things like, having a trunk in the front of the car, a frunk and a regular trunk. I mean, a lot of EVs, not all of them, but a lot of them have that. And all EVs have less parts, so there's less maintenance, which is what you were talking about. But when they do have both less parts and also, you know, space in the front and space in the back. You're talking about, you know, God forbid you get into an accident, but you have a humongous crumple zone. So there's that. There are accidents that I think if, you know, you were in a gas car, you know, the results would have been not as good. And that's one thing that people don't talk about as much, is that how much safer electric vehicles are. And they're newer cars, you know, the EVs, the current generation of EVs haven't been around that long. So they do have, you know, greater safety, you know, stuff in them. And Eden and I, on a trip, I remember we saw a car carrier trailer with several cars on it up in flames. Yeah. So it one of them must have caught fire, and there was a chain reaction, and, you know, traffic was backed up for miles with this huge, I thought it was the end of the world, you know, huge smoke coming up. And it's funny because in the news you hear about, you know, electric cars catching fire. If anything happens with Tesla, you hear about it. it's kind of seems to be skewed that way with the news. But statistics show that, you know, gas and diesel vehicles catch fire much more frequently.
Which makes sense.
Which totally makes sense. Yeah. So that's interesting. What do you think your peers feel about, because, you know, we are talking about a younger generation. What do you think your peers think about electric vehicles, car ownership, and all of that kind of stuff?
Well, I will say I'm including Eden in this, but my friend group is not your stereotypical friend group that you'd find on a college campus. and I mean that in a very good way. But I know that for people that I've talked to about this, we all are kind of really frustrated with car culture, because we grew up in a time post highways being built, and with all this suburban development pretty much completed, where, to use my old house as an example, when I grew up in the same house that my dad grew up in, and when he grew up, there was this huge woodsy area behind the house, and he and his parents would just turn them loose and they'd go out and play. Whereas when I grew up, that entire area had been torn down, and now there's a strip mall right there. And my mom didn't turn us out into the neighborhood and let us play. That's just something that we couldn't do, because now it's a bunch of streets and concrete, and there's nowhere for you to really play and explore. And I do think that that goes hand in hand with car culture and, like, cities not being accessible to pedestrians at all, where, like, car ownership is kind of treated as a necessary evil more than, oh, I'm really excited to get a car type thing, because we have that kind of frustration about, like we've heard all the stories about, like, oh, just come home when the streetlights turn on type thing, but we were never allowed to have that kind of childhood because of the way that suburban development has occurred. And so with that, like, yeah, because you asked, would you own an electric car in the future? And I would like to. I think that would be nice. But also, I know a lot of people spend a lot of money on cars that they can get a really nice car and that whole thing. But for me, if I got a car, it would be kind of the necessary evil type thing. And I would likely just get a cheap one as long as it works, whatever. And usually electric cars aren't all that cheap. And I am planning on being a public school teacher, so I don't think that an electric car will be in my budget.
Well, hopefully the prices will come down. I mean, they have already.
Yeah.
And since they're so new, I think it's also that there are, like, barely any used electric cars just because they're so new. So hopefully, you know, hopefully someday they'll come
down.
Well,
now with the chip shortage and...
Yeah, there are a lot more now.
Parts shortages and you know, prices of used cars are astronomical.
Also, yeah,
it's just prices of cars are very expensive right now. And hopefully that will change.
I do think that for myself and for my wider friend group, electric vehicles as a whole, very cool, big thumbs up. Whatever we need, whatever possible, or we support whatever could possibly help reduce the amount of pollution that we're putting out in this world. But also, I know that whenever me and my friends see a Tesla specifically out on the road, we're like, oh. Because it's seen, there's like in our minds, I guess, like electric cars and Teslas are two different things almost. Because with Teslas comes, like, a person buying a Tesla is a statement, where and a person buying an electric car is a completely different statement, where an electric car is just, I want to help the environment. But like a Tesla is like, look at me, I'm rich and I love Elon Musk and all of this stuff. And yeah, so
that's really interesting, because like I'm in a intersection of what you're talking about, where like most of my friend group is either like not even into driving at all, or not into car culture and vehemently against it, or driving apathetic, where it's like, yeah, I'll do it because I'm the person who's driving us around and I'd like to do an electric vehicle were they not prohibitively expensive. And then I've also got people in my life, like coworkers and family members, who are really into car culture, both in the sense that they're into like gas vehicles and into the sense that they're into electric vehicles as well, while also being a huge proponent of car culture. I know one of my coworkers, who's a similar age to me, like gets a new vehicle as often as possible, is really into the idea of being on the cutting edge of what vehicles are coming out, having latest features, and also really likes having an electric car. And specifically, like, the thing I'm thinking about is, like, currently he does not have a Tesla, but he's eyeing a Tesla because of that kind of statement of it, where it's like, yes, he's already got an electric car, but what he really wants is a Tesla. And it feels interesting because what you said, like, your friend group isn't necessarily like the typical college campus friend group. And so I've got my friends where it feels like the people I personally know and have surrounded myself with are people who are also reliant on public transportation, people who don't view cars as something they ever really want to mess with. And then outside of the people that I've kind of surrounded myself with, the people I happen to incidentally interact with, or people who I'm interacting with outside of that, are of, like, they're a lot more indulgent in it. And I think also part of it, like, a lot of my family lives in rural areas. And so most of my cousins who are driving age, they're looking at this and they see it as like, this is my shot at freedom. I finally get to go out and do things on my own schedule outside of when my parents can take me places, because like in the city, there's starting to be more electric stuff, but in rural areas, it's really hard to find if it's there at all. And then on top of that, like you're having to go such long distances between places, especially if you're not in the town that's within like an hour, 2 hour radius, that it's like, it's harder to swing that kind of stuff. And so it's like, for them, it's like electric vehicles don't even cross their minds. I've got like an uncle out in rural Kentucky where it's like, you know, he's one of those Tesla guys. He would love to have a Tesla for that statement. He can't because there's like no electric charging stations. And anytime he needs to go anywhere, it's like, well, I'm going an hour 45 out of the city and then I'm going to be there for a while. And then I got an hour 45 back. So even if he charges it at his house, there's only so much mileage he's getting out of that. Like, all of my friends are in this, like, yeah, no cars. Or like proponents of electric vehicles, and pretty much everybody outside of that bubble that I know personally is almost the opposite of that. And so it's a weird picture.
Yeah, and I feel like the whole like asking like how do people your age feel about cars and electric cars? And I think that, you know, the whole idea of that generational divide. While there is some difference between generations, I think that it's more difference, you know, the same things that have been different about other generations. You know, there are people who live in cities. There are people who live in rural areas. There are people who are, you know, politically a certain way, and then there's people who are politically a different way. So I think while things change over time, like how Stu, my dad, he also lived, you know, in a kind of suburban-ish area growing up, and you also, you know, had similar beliefs or whatever, and you know, learned how to drive and all that kind of stuff. And so that has changed over the generations, how I live in a kind of similar situation as you did growing up, but I have decided, like, I don't really want to drive. So that stuff changes, but I think that overall it stays similar because of people growing up in certain situations. Like, people who live in rural areas are more likely to buy, you know, a gas car, whether or not they're younger or older, because of the lack of infrastructure and because of how they've, you know, grown up. So I think that the sort of generational gap is not the best way to divide things, but I also think that it can influence some things.
For contrast, I mean, the second I turned 16, I was at the DMV taking my test. So, you know, back in the day, I don't know, you know, if I was unusual in that regard. I don't think I was. I think a lot of people, maybe especially guys, I don't know, wanted their license and they wanted to drive. And it was that kind of freedom, which I don't necessarily think is the case now. What about you, Spencer?
I was kind of the same way. At like 14, I was like pushing to get my permit. Like, I wanted to drive as soon as I was like legally able to, just because, like, growing up, like, we lived, like, my house was 3-4 miles. Like, if you wanted to walk anywhere, if you wanted to walk to like the gas station to buy chips, you'd walk 3 miles. So even just to like go down to the gas station to get like chips or anything, you essentially need a car. And if you wanted to go do anything else, which it was generally like go to like Walmart or whatever and just like kind of like mess around with your friends, like you needed a car for that. And so like anything outside of school, that was your ticket to freedom. And it especially became true during the summers because my parents worked throughout the summers. Like, I was either at home or I drove myself out to do something. I wanted to drive as soon as I could. And I've talked to my peers and my friends as well, and like throughout the years, and like I have a few friends that have the same sentiment, that's like driving is so-so, and for like a variety of reasons. I have a lot of friends that, like, I think it's a remnant of just like the, I think, I don't know how accurate this is, but I heard like from the redneck culture started through like modding like their trucks and cars to basically outrun the police. And so like that is kind of like a culture that is still like very much present. And there's like a huge culture around like modding vehicles. And I think that is kind of tied in with the gas kind of car culture, or the IC, or the internal combustion engine culture. And I've also talked to a few of my peers about electric vehicles, and a lot of them, especially in the like kind of younger demographic, are a lot more perceptive and open to electric vehicles. And I've kind of been in a unique position, I guess. I was given the opportunity to do a bunch of interviews with electric vehicle owners. So I talked to like a bunch of people throughout it, and it was mostly like 40s and above. But I found a few people kind of in their 20s and 30s, and it was like some situations where like they had like really great luck and they were like financially able to buy an electric vehicle that young. So I feel like a big part of it is there's like this want for electric vehicles in this group of, but there's that gap where like there's the group of people who want them that can't quite get them yet, because they're, one, either not like old enough or established enough to like be there, and then two, the price and the technology hasn't got cheap enough to meet in the middle. And that's kind of where I see it.
Yeah, no, and No, that's interesting, and I have actually some statistics that I have right here. There's a thing that was published by the Fuels Institute. This is from 2019, and this is part of the executive summary about who's the customer for electric cars in 2019, and it's changed some, I think, since then. But it says the top demographic of 2019 EV owners are middle-aged white men earning more than $100,000 annually with a college degree or higher and at least one other vehicle in their household. So that, I think, is kind of interesting. And one thing that I know on a personal level, because I get metrics for my podcast, and I like to take a look and see what we're doing as far as, you know, reaching out and including people. For the EV podcasts that I do and listeners divided by age, so 0 to 17, less than 1%. It's 18 to 22 years old is 3%. 23 to 27, 6%. 28 to 34, it jumps a bit to 16%. 35 to 44 is 8%. 45 to 59 is 41%. That's the largest right there. And then 60 plus is 24%. And, you know, that could be a function of affordability. In the beginning, you know, Teslas were synonymous with electric vehicles, and Teslas were expensive. We were talking about cars that were about the $100,000 range, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And people, you know, they saw this sexy car, and that, you know, Elon Musk at that time was saying, you know, we want to change the world. And a lot of people were kind of on that bandwagon. Now things have, you know, Teslas, other EVs have kind of come down in price, and we're hoping that they come down more. I'm kind of wondering, you know, what you think, you know, we've been talking a lot about like the transportation landscape. What do you think it's going to look like in 5 years, in 10 years? I mean, we're talking about things like all these car companies are working to self-driving, you know, or autopilot, or, you know, some form of self-driving, robo-taxis. I mean, is that something that's going to happen? Are they missing the mark? Is the fact that there's less interest in personal cars, is there going to be a larger change than that? You know, I'm just kind of wondering what you're thinking, again, 5 years out, 10 years out.
Well, first I want to go back to something that Spencer said earlier about car mods, because living on UK's campus, I'm sure Eden can attest to this, you experience a lot of car modifications. It's very loud.
Indeed.
Constantly, every night. Like, people will literally drive laps around campus just to rev their engines as loud as possible. And you'll hear this really loud engine and look and see who's driving, and it's like a minivan. It's like a competition to try and see who can get their car to be the loudest. And that's something that EVs just don't do. And so I would say, like, even to, so Eden problematized the generational divide, I'm going to problematize the class divide, because a lot of these people have a lot of money. They have like brand new, they call them pickup trucks. They're shaped like pickup trucks, but they're not meant to function like pickup trucks, because it goes back to the history of bootlegging with the loud cars and all the car modifications, where now all these people are driving super expensive pickup trucks that can't actually be working trucks because they're just cosplaying as the lower class. And that's another thing where you can't really do with an EV, where a lot of people, it's really cool to have a really big, a really loud, really fast car. And for some reason, a lot of people also like for their car to be very low to the ground, which is very funny to watch on UK's campus, because there are a lot of speed bumps and you just see people like scrape their cars along. It's really entertaining. But yeah, like, so a lot of people will pour a lot of money into these vehicles, whether it be their parents' money or their own. And there's a lot of pride into these modifications that they put into their cars. That's something that EVs just aren't accommodating, I guess. And then to answer your question about the future, I will say I don't really have much faith in companies to, I guess, change the world for the better, because at the end of the day, they're looking for their bottom line. And they could very easily make electric cars a lot cheaper than they are right now. And then a lot of these people that we've been talking about who would hypothetically love to get an electric car but can't afford one, suddenly that big group of people could go and get an electric car. And we could have all these new charging stations put up for relatively cheap, but that's not happening because they make more money having really expensive statement pieces rather than actual everyday cars. And with the, I guess, lack of interest in getting personal cars, at least based off of this group of people that's talking, I would love for people to take a look at this and be like, okay, let's pour a lot of money into making our public transportation system better. But I feel like that's also a pipe dream, and I don't think that that's something that's actually going to happen. So we have our gig economy now with Uber and Lyft, where companies are able to make a whole lot of money. They don't have to pay their employees a lot of money or give them benefits. And they're able to, I guess, take money from our demographic of people who are not really all that interested in getting personal cars. And I, to be completely honest, I have a feeling that this is how it's going to continue for the next 5 or 10 years, unless there's some sort of, I don't want to say legislation, but some sort of force making these gig economy companies treat their employees better, and suddenly, oh no, you have to give your employees benefits. I have a feeling that unless something changes, it's just going to be more of the same.
Yeah, I feel I've got a lot of similar opinions to that. I do think it's interesting in that we've got this sort of divide of people who just don't want cars, or they don't want more gasoline, who are at least nominally environmentally conscious, and whether that manifests in a desire to use public transportation or not to use cars at all, or to use primarily electric vehicles. Like, there's a bunch of different ways it can manifest. And even if you're like just a little bit invested in it, usually that's enough to kind of spur you onto it. And in high school, that felt like a decent amount of my peers. In like the people I've talked to when I was attending school, the people I talked to on campus, like who weren't already into cars, were like, if I could be driving an electric, I would, or I'm not driving at all, or I'm using public transportation mostly. And then you've got the people who are still into cars because they're really into cars. And they're really into the idea of it being big and fast and flashy and new. And so you've got like the issues of like cars being built nowadays that are like so big that you can't see if somebody's smaller than like 5'6" is coming across the street, and are built powerful enough that like by the time you see them, it's not going to matter. And like on the electric vehicle side of things, the big, like, if they're the rare overlap, like I mentioned, my coworker who's into electric vehicles and also just vehicles, like, you've got the electric vehicles where it's like, in order to cater that market, like, in order to court people who are into cars, of course it's got to be expensive, it's got to be elite and out of reach, and otherwise it's just anybody's car, and it's not going to be, like, a car person's car. And so I do think that's interesting where we're starting to see, like, I wonder if we're going to start seeing like a big parting of the ways where it's like, as more and more younger people are like, I just don't want to engage with that culture. And like, we've got a bigger demographic full of people like that, that's just growing, even if they don't have access to it. And then we've also got the people who are just vehemently holding on to the car culture that they've got, whether it's because it's like something they grew up with or something that gives them status or just a way to feel cooler. I wonder if like that's going to contribute to anything at all. I don't know if that's going to prolong this like sort of weird stalemate going on with like electric vehicles right now, or if it's like going to shorten it at some point. I don't really know. But I kind of feel the same way as Dylan here, where it's like, honestly, like the real thing is like availability of electric vehicles and robustness of public transportation. And that's something where it's like it's reliant on like, you know, if I was living in a different state, in a different city, I could see people getting really into the idea of building up a robust transportation system, like a public transportation system. But I don't live in that state and I don't live in that city. And so when I look around me and I look at the places around me, it's like I don't see that much like optimism for that kind of stuff. I'd see just digging deeper into like gas vehicles and stuff like that, because especially where Kentucky is a mostly rural state, I can see if it's ever brought up on a state level being like that is just prioritizing a few places, that it's not going to represent the whole state. It's not going to it's prioritizing the like certain groups of people over others and like funding issues. And so it's something that's like, I feel like in Kentucky, like that's something that's probably not going to happen for at least a couple decades. When this technology is more ubiquitous, and more affordable, probably.
Yeah. Personally, it might be a bit of a long shot, but I personally think we might move more towards light electric vehicles or a larger culture using electric bikes. Just working up here at summer camp, we've already had, like, there's a huge bike culture, so, like, cyclists up here. So a lot of them bring them to summer camp. Some whole troops bring them to summer camp. And I've seen a couple electric bikes this year, which has made me very excited because I would love to see the light electric vehicle market, like that section of it, take off. Because if I'm not in a position where I can buy a whole vehicle, I would 100% buy an electric like bike, and like live in a city and like take my bike places. Like I think that would be awesome. And then the light electric vehicles, there's a whole class of vehicles where it's like two or three person vehicle. And sometimes they're even like three wheels. They're a lot cheaper. They have around the same range and they're just smaller. But they're still street legal and everything. And I feel like that is the closest thing right now as like that I could see like really being the future of electric vehicles, is there's going to be less people like needing, like there will still be cases like moms with like four children and then plus dad, so that's like five, six people that need to be in one vehicle. I could see that of needing the larger electric vehicles, but I feel like there's going to be more of a trend towards more personal electric vehicles, and as well with like electric motorcycles. Like I've seen those also taking off in recent years. Electric vehicles have kind of only been like a thing for a few years, but like my personal like foresight of the future is I think we're trending, or I would see us like trending more towards more personal and light electric vehicles.
Does where you live have those electric scooter rental systems that are around everywhere? I've seen so many of those scooters in some of the weirdest places. And that's something where it's like, I know that before my younger sister got a car, she lived on those things. So I could definitely see there like being a market for like more smaller, personalized citywide transportation, especially in places that are not investing in their public transportation system. I could see that being a big thing.
And just me personally with the bike, like I've been teaching mountain biking here for like 3 years now. So like I'm used to biking, but like if I can just have that little bit of like, I don't have to pedal up this hill if I don't want to. Like, I would love that. And then you can just coast down the hill, recharge your battery. I think electric bikes are really kind of slept on, in my opinion, but...
You mean you don't want to, like, break your calves going up a huge hill? That's the best part of riding a bike.
Yeah, but they are still pretty expensive, as far as, like, bikes go. And I feel like there's a middle ground there. Like, if we could get, like, a light motorcycle where they're not... Because the electric motorcycles out now are, like, $20,000, $30,000, which is still, like, a car. So, like, if there's, like, an electric motorcycle that's, like, around, I don't know, $5,000-$6,000, I feel like that would be a better, like, middle ground, which is still a lot for a vehicle, but, or at least in, yeah, I still think that would be a lot of money to spend right now, but, I don't know. I think that would be better.
Well, and you're saying to spend right now, and if we're looking at this, all of you are still, you know, like 20. And so in the future, you will have more or different employment, hopefully making more money. So more money will be coming in and you will have to get to work. But even that, there seems to be with COVID, there's this newfound flexibility of folks working from home that wasn't as prevalent before. So we find that in our household that we are not driving as much as we were before. And so that, I think that's something. And with electric transportation, the whole idea, hopefully, is that the cost will come down and that there will be options at least with electric cars, you know, in maybe the more $25,000 to $30,000 range, you know, and all this money coming in from, you know, the infrastructure bill and everything, that there will be, like you were talking about, rural areas. That's in the plan, you know, even here in Kentucky to have, you know, more chargers. And we're lobbying at Evolve KY. We're lobbying for folks in these more remote areas not to get left behind like they often do. So, you know, that's, it's all good about having those kinds of discussions. So that's very interesting. Are there any other things that I guess we didn't bring up that you'd like to bring up or are interested in kind of in this realm?
I guess one thing... So my friend drove me to and from Lexington Pride the other day. So that was about an hour long drive. And on the way, we actually started talking about electric cars because we saw one. And he's very, very big into helping the environment. And his reaction to seeing the electric car, he said something along the lines of, they're not even that much better for the environment. And I think that that's something that, a lot of people my age, I've heard people say that because a lot of these charging stations are just pulling power from coal plants. Just it, because we are Kentucky, so, you know. But I guess it goes hand in hand with my hope that we see an uptick in solar power. Me personally, that's not really a hang up for me because my hope is most electric cars are powered by some kind of renewable resource. But it is something with, since we are in Kentucky, solar power still isn't as big of a thing here as it is in like California or Florida. And I remember I was pulling up to y'all's house and I was like, oh, solar panels, that's cool, because that's just not really something that you see here. And so, yeah, I guess my big thing is, yes, electric cars are very good to be added, but it shouldn't be the only thing that we're doing for the environment.
Right. And I'll just kind of jump in with the environmental stuff, because with electric cars compared to gas or diesel vehicles, studies have shown that even powered by coal, on average, they're 50% mm-hmm. cleaner than gas and diesel vehicles. Gas and diesel vehicles are just insanely dirty. So, yeah. So if you're weighing one or the other, whether it's a Tesla or any other EV, I can say with certainty that it is cleaner. again, even powered by dirty fuel, it has no tailpipe emissions, which is huge for a lot of people with allergies and asthma. We have two members of Evolve KY that have double lung transplants. So all that stuff being thrown into the air is deadly and makes people sick. So better to walk, better to ride your bike, absolutely. But when you're talking about kind of personal transportation, electric, gas or diesel, electric wins out virtually all the time. I'm not a big fan of humongous electric vehicles necessarily, because when you're looking at resources, I don't necessarily think you should be driving around in your living room.
Yeah.
So, and there are people that are going to be, you know, carrying a lot of people around. But and the other thing that you brought up that's very interesting is electric vehicles are the only type of vehicle that actually can become greener over time. Mm-hmm. So if you have an electric vehicle that you get on Monday and you put solar panels on your roof on Wednesday, or on Wednesday, the grid, you know, the local utility puts up a field of solar panels, all of a sudden on Wednesday, your vehicle gets greener, and there's no other vehicle that can do that. Plus the how long they last is huge compared to gas and diesel vehicles. I can kind of go on and on about
all that. Yeah, and I feel like it's also a thing where, while, you know, if everybody got an electric car tomorrow, yeah, that would help a lot. But I think a lot of the stuff is you have to look at everything with an electric car. It is greener, and it will, you know, help if you have asthma and stuff. But the biggest thing is not, you know, getting electric cars, because not everybody's gonna have electric car at the you know, when you snap your fingers. The biggest thing, you know, it's not people personally doing stuff that's causing the most you know, pollution and you know, global warming. It's corporations. And I feel like while it is important to, you know, push electric car adoption, I think that along with that, if you want to help the environment, you have to also look into these other ways of, you know, keeping these, you know, making these corporations greener more than just, you know, the getting your own personal electric car.
Yeah, I mean, what's the statistic? It's like the 71% of pollution is caused by the top 100 companies or something like that. Like, it's not a personal problem. And it does, yeah, I do find it pretty annoying when people are like, oh, just turn your lights off when you leave the room and then the turtles will stop dying, which is something that I was raised being taught, because I'm sure, and this is a generational thing, I'm sure that y'all were also, like, as a kid, had it drilled into you that it's on you guys to save the environment, and it's like, thanks for all this stress, I'm 7 years old. But yeah, it's like, it doesn't matter if you use a plastic toothbrush or a wooden one when you have 71% of the pollution being caused by just 100 companies. So yeah, electric cars are great, but definitely not the only thing that needs to change around here.
That is an interesting point, because I think something I've noticed is people who were initially really excited about the idea of mass adoption of electric vehicles and then saw, like, honestly, any downside of it, where it's like either the company being complicated, or the idea of, like, well, they still got to draw their power from somewhere, or like any other complication. And because there was just so much anxiety piled on about climate and so much, like, emotional stress involved with that, and the idea of, like, well, we got to find a solution that works now, because, you know, from childhood where it's like, you're going to be the one to save the planet, it's all on you, to, you know, once you get older, you're looking into news and you're like, oh no, everything's terrible. Whether or not, like, it's, the immediacy is something where it's like, it's always a bit foggy, but even in the sense where it's like, you're coming up on it and it's like, oh, because we were children, we could only do so much to save the planet. And now the planet's dying. and you feel like you're constantly on a precipice. Every generation feels like they're the one where they're the last one that's ever going to live. But, like, sometimes it feels closer. And so they look at this and they see that it's not doing everything immediately. And they just immediately become apathetic and immediately just lose all their drive. And that's, and that's something that, like, I felt in myself. Like, it's something where it's like I've had a passing interest in electric vehicles, but it wasn't until, like, literally this call that it's like, oh, you mentioned they're the only vehicles that can get greener over time. They're the only vehicles that you own where it's like you buy it and it could get better for the environment over the course of time while you own it. And so that's something where it's like, it is interesting in this sense where it's like, I wonder if there's, like, more to do with that discussion where it's like, it's not on your shoulders to save the planet. It's on people who own, companies that are bigger than God and will, touch more than you can ever touch in your lifetime. But, there's a sort of collaboration there when it comes to this kind of thing where it's like, you can do your part. And if by some miracle, somebody who's richer than God can do their part, those working together works exponentially better. And that's something where it's like, oh yeah, there's something to consider there that isn't just, well, if the corp, like, if it's not working immediately right now, then it's just, we got to work on something else. And that's not necessarily like a criticism of the idea that, like, corporations shouldn't be doing, like, it's not necessarily a criticism of that. It's more of just like, maybe I wonder if, like, that sense of panic and apathy where it's like, everything's just got to be fixed or else we're all dead. I wonder if that's contributing to, like, some of the hesitancy toward it, where it's like, if it's not doing everything right now, it's never going to do anything for us ever, because we've only got so much ever, and there's no faith in larger powers to collaborate. And I wonder what steps could be taken to, like, alleviate some of that stress and alleviate some of that burden off of people, and to inspire that idea of, this is something that you put time into it now and it only gets better.
Yeah, like, just to rephrase what you just said, I think it's pretty safe to say that our generation has been traumatized by the climate crisis, and this sort of learned apathy or analysis paralysis or whatever other catchphrase you want to add in there, it's just a trauma response. Where we were raised being told that it's on us to save the world, and now we're getting all these like, I'll get notifications on my phone that's like, new study just released. If we don't change anything by 2025, we're all doomed. And then you get this sort of, well, I'm just going to throw my hands up, I guess, because what am I, one person, going to do? And there is a, it's the doomer mindset, where that's something that's been a big issue these past couple of years, is a lot of these people going into what people call doomerism, where it's just like, well, everything's horrible, everything's going to continue being horrible, so what is it that I can do to change it? Why even try? And I do think that that is not at all the way to respond to this sort of thing. I understand that response. It's not a healthy or good response either way. I do think that if people our age can, like, everybody does their little part as we're all fighting as a unit to also influence these companies to do their part as well, then you get out of that sort of helpless feeling, and you stop just kind of, to use an on-topic metaphor, spinning your wheels. Like everybody, once you do something little to start changing stuff, suddenly things feel more manageable. And I do think that possibly in the future, one of those little things that people can do is switch to EVs. To at least, I don't know, give us a little bit of hope.
No, I think that was well said. Yeah, and it's very easy to get bogged down with all the negative stuff. And I mean, and personally, I know with my podcast, I feel like it's one little thing that I enjoy, and I feel like I'm doing something good, and hopefully, you know, reaching a few people. And, you know, I think it is a combination of doing what you can in your personal life, but also being very aware of what's going on in the greater community, and really working hard to make change there. It really has to be an all-in kind of thing. So,
I mean, I just like a quick note, like I love this conversation. I've been out of the EV space for a little bit just simply because like school and this summer. But like just this conversation has gotten like ideas rolling again and everything. And like, I saw this chart the other day about, like skill level and stress. And like, it had like anxiety, worry, and like apathy on the like stress line. So like when you were talking about like the apathy, the stuff that like was able to progress it from apathy to like some different kind of emotional states around it, were like, was along that like skill level line. And like, of course, this is all sourced from like a random YouTube video I watched like the other night.
What better source?
Exactly. But like, and it kind of goes back to what you were saying, is like you're in this like apathetic spot where like you're like, there's nothing I can do. But as soon as you have the skill or like the thing that like, oh, there's something I can do, like it pushes you out of that apathy a little bit. And I think obviously we have that anxiety like as well. And I feel like we're balancing a lot in between like the apathy and the anxiety. And like, I feel that a lot. And so like, that's why I'm watching like YouTube videos that come up about it. But basically the gist of it that I found was like, what skills, like if you have like something like teaching, what did I, so I just started teaching archery. Like, okay, that's a new challenge, like high stress level. The answer to that is get more skilled at teaching archery. And it's like, okay, how do I do that? And so like, that's what I was running through when you were, Dylan, you were talking about that, and Kelly as well. Y'all were talking about the whole like attitude around the climate crisis. I was like, what skills can we like help facilitate people learning that make a difference, or what tangible things outside of just electric vehicles? Like, I don't know. And like, I don't have an answer to that. That's just like food for thought, I guess.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, one of the biggest ways to help with apathy is just having a community. And if nothing else, even if electric cars, you know, didn't do anything for the environment, at least it's people getting together and enjoying something together.
Yeah.
I feel like that's important too.
There is something really important about spaces like this, even just like this podcast or like the like groups that form around electric vehicles, where it's like, not like, at the very least, they're opening the conversation. They're not waiting for the exact right moment to jump in with the perfect idea that's going to fix everything. A lot of this stuff gets better with community and with conversation, with people bouncing ideas off each other. And this kind of work is, in a lot of ways, like invaluable.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is getting long and I have to edit this, so.
Quit telling longer to make this worse.
Thank you all for joining today. This has really been great. This is our first roundtable, and it's been great. I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed, you know, listening to you all. So thank you again. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Awesome.
Thank you.
Good job, team.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Stu's EV Universe. I would like to thank Eden Unger for creating the artwork and the music for this episode. Remember, please rate, review, subscribe, and share, as that's the only way we can continue to grow. Now you can support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/stusevu. Remember, the EV revolution runs on your energy. I'm Stuart Unger. See you next time.